We're back on Cambridge Inside Out, and it is still August 19th, 2025. So I wanted to talk a little bit about candidate slates, what roles they play, emerging groups that are sort of becoming players, maybe, maybe not, and where that all stands. I mean, let me just speak freely here and just say that for many, many years, from 19, really, if you go back even into the 1930s, but primarily from 19, the Plan E era, which commenced with the 1941 election, we had two primary camps politically in the city. There was Cambridge Civic Association, which was technically only formed in 1945, but really had existed as the Committee for Plan E and a couple of other organizations that merged in 1995 under the banner of Cambridge Civic Association. And then there was basically the not CCA group, that was the Independents. But they were somewhat sometimes organized, sometimes disorganized, but they were more identifiable with what you might think of as the townies. Right, they typically ran neighborhood-based campaigns. So whether it's Al Vellucci running out of East Cambridge, or Tom Danny out of North Cambridge, or Danny Clinton out of Cambridge Port over the years, Sheila Russell was an independent candidate, and Lenny Russell, her husband before her, which were largely running out of West Cambridge, and what later came to be called Huron Village, which only caused Sheila to laugh, but that part of town. Of course, all of these candidates drew support from a lot of other people, a lot of other parts of the city and other constituencies. In her later elections, Sheila Russell, for example, drew a lot of support from elderly voters, which was very much not specific to a neighborhood. So the dichotomy, the political dichotomy, was basically CCA versus independence. And from about 1969 to 1970 on, you could throw in the Cambridge Tenants Union as during the rent control years. So they were a major player in forming a tenant slate from about 1970 until, I guess, when rent control disappeared post the 1994 election. And then we actually went through a period when the CCA completely disintegrated, and so I think in the very late 1990s through the early 2000s, there was almost sort of an echo of the Cambridge Civic Association, but not really. They still actually did a couple of formal endorsements to maybe about 2001, but I don't know that that was particularly effective anymore. And then we went through a period of at least a decade where there were essentially no organizations to speak of. And then maybe 12 years ago, you started to see the reemergence of these endorsing type organizations. I think first there was one that had Nadeem Mazin, Dennis Carlone, and somebody else, Janicki House, I think, were a threefer. And then we saw the Cambridge Residents Alliance inserted itself into the game as sort of an endorsing organization. I think really when things started to take off was when the partly in response to the Cambridge Residents Alliance, the group that later called itself A Better Cambridge came into existence and has been selling itself, whether accurately or inaccurately, as the pro-housing group. I think probably more accurately could be characterized as the pro-density group than anything else, or and of course, if you're from the other point of view, you just call them the developer group. But that's kind of a epithet in Cambridge. Say you're just a developer, right? But so they started backing candidates, and are still doing so, promoting themselves as the pro housing. And for a while, I think it was sort of we're the group that's promoting affordable housing, but really it's building housing. And again, I don't think anybody's opposed to building housing. Let's be clear about that. It's a question of how much, how high, how dense, and where, right? And what fraction of it should be subsidized either by the city or by private developers. And I think there is a range of perfectly valid points of view when it comes to those matters. And nobody should be disparaging anyone or any other group as being anti-housing just because they don't happen to agree with your particular agenda. But anyway, the ABC group, which I still sometimes refer to as a bigger Cambridge or aggressively bulldozing Cambridge, they will sell themselves again this year as the ones vote for us if you want affordable housing. But it's not so clear that they've actually developed any affordable housing to speak of. Or I think even the affordable housing overlay that they certainly supported has largely resulted in simply the expansion of public housing and subsidized housing on pre-existing lots. There are a few other locations in the pipeline. So there may be several hundred units of housing that are not part of existing properties operated and owned by Justice Star, Cambridge Homeowners Rehab or the Cambridge Housing Authority, but it's primarily been an expansion of subsidized or public housing. It's what it really has been. Over these last couple of years, there's been a couple of sort of big things that have happened, namely the so-called multifamily housing zoning change, which is a complete misnomer because I don't think anybody objected. Well, very few people objected to the allowance of multifamily housing citywide. But it was primarily a densification proposal to allow significantly greater heights and densities. So it was tapped down a little bit, thanks to Paul Toner, to sort of have it be four stories as of right everywhere, which is, where I live, four stories is just a minor change. But if you were out in what was used to be called the resident A zones, that could be a very significant change. I mean, if you got a lot of single family homes and next thing you know, somebody purchases the lot next door and puts up a four story building or a six story building, if you include inclusionary zoning on a street that has, one and a half story buildings. It's a huge change. And in fact, it's actually causing quite a lot of alarm, which may or may not express itself in terms of political choices this year. We'll see. I'm thinking of Ellery Street as one place where that, but there's actually a few other sites around the city where this is starting to become a bit of an issue. Anyway, there's actually more in the pipeline. I think there's proposals currently being discussed about dramatic increases in heights and densities along, and reduction of setbacks. I should probably emphasize that. So, in other words, if you were supposed to have like a 20-foot setback from the rear of the lot, and then it's been reduced to five, which is barely enough to fit the garbage cans in, then that's kind of an intrusion. Let's face it, that's an intrusion. But along some of the major corridors, Cambridge Street, and we'll see how they want to define corridors when all is said and done. Some are proposing, I think the ABC people are proposing 9 stories, 13 stories, 25 stories. And so that should become the rule. And, as I often like to point out to people, I grew up originally in New York City, went to Flushing High School, and I watched as most of Flushing just basically pretty much got run over and turned into these very supersized apartment buildings. And it's not really a place I like so much anymore once upon a time. And, to what degree do you as a current resident have agency and a right to dictate what the future city should look like? I am of the opinion that as a voter and an existing resident, you have every right to have some input into this. Zoning is a tool for doing that. And if you like the fact, and you originally invested your money by buying a home in Cambridge because you liked the fact that it was sort of topping off at 35 feet and maybe triple deckers here and there, and you don't necessarily want to see everything torn down and turned into six-story or 13-story buildings, I think that's a completely valid point of view. And if anybody decides to call you a NIMBY for that, well, tough on them. You know, the truth is, you know, if you live here, you may have a point of view. And I think those are perfectly valid points of view. And, you know, and I'm, believe me, I'm pro-capitalism all throughout, but that doesn't mean that even a property developer or a capitalist, a big property owner should have absolute unfettered rights to overwhelm existing streets, especially streets that are already working really, really well. You know, that's like blockbusting of some sort, you know. So anyway, I do have a right to express my point of view on that, and I have every intention of doing so. Anyway, you know, if even if you believe in transit-oriented development, and as I do, then you do believe that there should be greater heights and densities close to public transit. So yes for Central Square, yes for Porter Square, which I know some people in Porter Square would like to see it stay, you know, two-story commercial fronts, but I think it really does need to go a bit bigger, ultimately with a commuter rail as well as rapid transit going right through there, as well as a number of bus lines. It's a question of how much. What do you consider acceptable? And you know, just because there is a shortage of housing in the region doesn't necessarily mean that Cambridge has to supply all and to fill the entire deficit single-handedly. In fact, it's completely ridiculous to actually support that point of view, in my opinion. This is a regional situation. Or a national situation about housing shortages, and it should not be pseudo cured by one individual city. You know, you should just do what's right and plan it accordingly. See where it goes. All right. So I think I've probably talked a little bit more about that than I had intended to do. So let me just say one thing about factions, and then I want to just say a little bit about what's actually happened at some of the city council meetings recently. So, as I say, there was once upon a time there was, you know, CCA and independence. What I've noticed over the last few years, and it's just a little bit of an essay I wrote last night, just when I was thinking out loud, was there's this sort of this interesting growth. Maybe fueled by the Ma Zoran Mamdani success in so far in New York City in the mayoral election, but the very hard left organizations around the city seem to be coalescing, not only in terms of the people who are involved in them, but even how they're approaching the municipal election. So there was a this year there was an entity that just appeared out of nowhere called the Cambridge Progressive Electoral Collaboration, which I won't click on right here because of time, but I'll say that basically it's all the left-leaning organizations in the city, you know, which includes groups like you know, the Cambridge Residents Alliance, which has really become indistinguishable from the Democratic Socialists, the Our Revolution Group. These new groups, they call themselves the what are they called? There's the Cambridge, what is it called now? It's the Cambridge of Housing Affordability Organizers, CHAO. There's another group that calls itself the Cambridge Housing Justice Coalition, which actually many of the people seem to be all part of the Cambridge Residents Alliance and the Democratic Socialists of America. But hey, if you want to have it, want to wear multiple hats, it's your right, I guess. But they all seem to be coalescing, and they put out this questionnaire for city council candidates, I think school committee candidates as well, which is it's really like a laundry list of every hard ex pretty much extreme left position that you would want, including things about international matters such as how where you stand on Israel, Gaza, and boycotting Israel, et cetera, which, as far as I'm concerned, has absolutely no business in municipal election discussions. But you know, but I know that a few of the candidates are oriented that way, and I know that they certainly have influence in the forming of those questions. So they were trying to pin down candidates to take strong positions or no position on some of these ones here. I will not fill out questionnaires like that. As far as I'm concerned, if you want to be a candidate, you should present to the voters who you are, and not simply become sort of a lackey for these self-appointed, self-anointed endorsing organizations. Voters should rise above that. Just look at the individual candidates. They really should. Again, there are these pre-existing organizations that have been endorsing the last few years, like ABC, A Better Cambridge, and Cambridge Citizens Coalition. But honestly, all of these organizations are starting to become like incumbency protection organizations first, and then they kind of pad it out with a few other candidates. I suppose in a good sense, trying to get new blood in the mix, which I think is a great thing here, but also sort of trying to at least go through the motions to make it look like it's balanced in whatever, however you choose to look upon balance there. But quite honestly, all of these organizations are really just, like a handful, or at least two or three people, if not at most 10, who are basically appointing themselves as the arbiters of who's acceptable and who is not. And as a voter, if you think that that's how things ought to be, then good luck. So anyway, let me just pivot here now and talk a little bit about what's some of the more significant things that have been happening up at the city council in the la and you know and the city administration over the last several months. Since I last did a program here in early July, actually a lot has happened. One thing that came up, I think maybe even as early as June 30th, there was this big business where there was something that's called the East Cambridge Community Enhancement Overlay District, or something like that. Basically, it was a development proposal where there was tied to it was a letter of commitment to give over $20 million to support East Cambridge interests, most particularly the East End House, which is a great entity that deserves the money. But if you happen to be operating, a settlement house or something close to where high tech and biotech development is happening, then you have an opportunity to, have these sort of fringe benefits when somebody wants to do something nearby. You are a choice charity. But if it's something like the Cambridge Community Center over on Callender Street in the Riverside neighborhood, probably not going to see a big life science development happening next door. So you're probably not going to get a big opportunity to get a big windfall. So it was a big controversy at the end of June. It sort of culminated in a meeting, the midsummer city council meeting on August 4th. And at that meeting, there was, I guess you could call it a compromise, or a little touch of Solomonic wisdom, how to divvy things up in a way that everybody could walk away either somewhat happy and somewhat unhappy. So some of the money that was originally promised for the East Cambridge interest was reallocated by mutual agreement amongst the elected officials and the property developers, BioMed Realty, I believe, so that some additional money, so it was in the end about $20 million, significant, to basically for East End House. But 1,250,770 for, I think, what was that for? For a combination of three other entities, including the dance complex, Cambridge Community Center, and one other. There was additional money also, I think maybe a half a million dollars to Cambridge Economic Opportunity Commission, CEOC, which operates out of the building behind City Hall on Inman Street. So everybody got a little piece of the action, Now, this is all well and good. I like charity. Charity's good. Generosity is good. But there is something about the so-called contract zoning and where decisions about the future of the city are made not based on good planning principles, but basically on who can cough up cash to support your favorite things. I wish we didn't do things that way. I really wish. But this so-called contract zoning seems to be the norm. And and I guess, well, if that is going to be the norm, even if it's not the best way to do business, then coming up with some reasonably fair allocation is, I guess, appropriate. So, I mean, this issue came up some years ago, in much the same way, and there was a community benefits committee was formed to sort of so that you would basically have the contract zoning money would go into a kitty that would then there would be a committee that would decide how it could be fairly allocated to various nonprofit entities around the city. And maybe some people didn't like the fact that this one that was happening down East Cambridge this year seemed to violate that. But I don't know what's right, honestly. I mean, there's some public policy matters that are easy to decide what's right and what's wrong. Some are less easy. I would call this one that in the less easy category. One other thing that was kind of a big deal, at least politically, was there was proposals because of some of the federal excesses that we've been witnessing to change some of the language of the so-called Welcoming City Ordinance to put more and more restrictions on how city officials and most notably the Cambridge Police Department should interact with federal immigration authorities who are basically coming here to arrest people. I think that's kind of a risky business. And then I think the city solicitor and Cambridge Police Department made it pretty clear that, it's not like you can have the local police force confronting and challenging and obstructing federal officials. You just can't do that legally. But you don't have to cooperate. And I think that was sort of the main thing. Now, personally, I don't think they needed to change any of the language. The language was plainly clear. It just says we are under no obligation to assist the immigration officials. But there are some city councilors, ultimately a majority of city councilors, who want to be very, very specific about what Cambridge police can and cannot do. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. You just set a policy and then stand back and let the police do their job. And they can read. They know what the priorities are, and I think they're pretty good at adhering to them. But that was a big deal. And then I think on August 4th, they did do the amendments for the Welcoming City Ordinance, or at least passed it to a second reading. I'm not 100% sure. That's one of the meetings that I actually did not watch and didn't follow the recording. I just sort of jotted down the results of that particular meeting. Again, let me just say that during J the month of July, there were actually two special meetings that were, I think they're more characterizable as sort of partial executive session type meetings because they involved financial settlements and litigation. So going back to, I believe it was 2014, actually, I'm not 100% sure now, but there was a, I will, actually, I think I will actually jump over to this briefly here. There was an eminent domain taking by the city of the Vail Court property, which is over where Temple Street meets Bishop Allen Drive. I thought it was not the smartest thing to do that at the time, but the city did take the property, demolished the existing buildings on it, and paid the owners $3.7 million for that. Now, I will say though that at the time, I already knew somebody who had offered considerably more than that, who wanted to buy the property to develop it, redevelop it. So I knew that was lowballed. So in the end, at a meeting on July 21st, with the advice of the law department, the city coughed up an additional $4.3 million to bring it to a total of $8 million to settle that matter. And I presume all of that paperwork has gone through and the matter should be settled by now. But that's, basically they had to pay more money for the extra than they did in the original taking. So, But again, the $8 million total is a little closer to what I know that was already offered and was a good estimate. So I think that was the right thing to have done. Another matter here, which I'm not going to dwell on here, but I'll just briefly share it here, is that it was in a July 23rd meeting, the city coughed up $20 million for purposes of which I am not 100% clear, because there was an emergency situation at the Riverview Condominiums on Mount Auburn Street, which actually has resulted in road closures, and there's actual concern of potential collapse of the building that faces onto Mount Auburn. How the condominium owners will be made whole in this whole process is completely besides it. I mean, I don't understand exactly how this is all going to shake out, but we should be seeing some demolition activities commencing at some point for this building here. And again, exactly what the $20 million contribution from the city is for, I'm not 100% sure, but that's what's happening. So anyway, there are other things to come. We'll see. This is a municipal election year, and I think I maybe will leave it at that. I think the city council meeting will reconvene in September. I believe it's September 8th for the next regular meeting of the city council. So anyway, keep an eye out there, support your local candidates or not. And hopefully I'll be seeing you all again soon on Cambridge Inside Out.